Well, we are continuing our series, Faith in Action. We've been going through the book of James. Tonight, we'll be in James chapter 3. But in week 1, we talked about how God builds through the battle. Week 2 was don't just hear it, live it. Week 3 was no room for favoritism. And then last week was faith that does something. And so I want to encourage you, if you haven't, go to our YouTube channel, subscribe. Because here's one of the things, Facebook's no longer keeping old live feeds. So you got to be on that YouTube channel to get all of the messages. But go there, subscribe, and listen if you miss any of these, right? But and this week, what we want to do is we want to talk about something else. And James really hits a nerve with this. He's gonna go after our mouths. And so, who in here feels like they've got a handle of their mouth? You know, real good handle. Any liars in the room? I see. Yeah, Bo's probably over there. If you've ever been in a conversation with Bo, you know that he's being dishonest. And if you've ever been in a conversation with Bo, you're probably still in one with him, right? It hadn't ended yet. But he goes after our mouths because, let's be honest, recovery, right? The things of God, this relationship with Jesus, it requires a new vocabulary, right? That we begin to surrender that to him. And so some of us, we burn bridges, wrecked relationships, hurt people, not with our fists, but with our words. And I'm good at this. I have a gift for gab, right? And I like to talk. And when you get me going and this is temper flying, I'm real good at tearing people down with my words, right? And that's not to brag. That's something that I honestly dislike about me. It's probably the shield that I put up the fastest. And so many of us fall into this category, right? That we hurt people we care about. And this is what I've come to know. It's typically the people that we're closest to, that we love the most, that we injure the most, with our words. And so I don't care how long you've been saved, how many Bible verses you memorized, or how sweet you look during worship, right? And I remember, man, I was just so surprised. I'm going to pick on my wife. She's in the back. But the first time we got married, my wife is so sweet and so calm, and she really is. And the first time we got in an argument and I heard the F word come out of her mouth, I'm like, who did I marry? Like, I'm the only one that can act like that. There can't be two of us. But how sweet you look during worship. Your mouth, it's gotten you in trouble, right? Unless you're a mute, your mouth at some point will get you in trouble, right? And causes you to fall short and to live in regret. And so let's be real. Who here has ever talked themselves into a fight? Anybody, right? Oh, come on. All of us, man, we do it all the time. Be real honest. My wife and I, we're in conflict after staff meeting today. It was real fun. You had a good time, honey? She's like, she just gave me the middle finger mentally. And so that's one of the gifts of working with your spouse, right? And so we'll talk ourselves into a fight. Others of us, and you've talked yourself into relapsing, right? Going back to old things and not just necessarily drugs, but I'll never do that again. And then you convince yourself, what with your mouth, right? Your words. You begin that mental conversation and you begin to open those doors to go back to old behaviors, habits, relationships. You talk yourself, we'll talk ourselves into a hole, climb out of it and talk ourselves right back into it, right? Because our words, they matter. They're powerful. They impact our lives. And some of us could have had a better day. We could have better days if we just shut up. We would just shut our mouths, right? So much in our lives would change. I could just look back at so many situations, arguments with my kids, that if they would have just shut up, it would have been so much better for them. And then there's other opportunities. If I would have just shut up, you know, my kids would probably love me a little more, right? Have a little more respect for me. And situations with my wife, with my boss, right? These things I've said online or what have you, they're filled with so much regret. Because our words, despite what we were told as kids growing up, right? Sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me. That kind of nonsense. We grow up and we realize that our words are powerful, right? They shape and direct our lives and impact our relationships. They carry a real power. And the truth is, your mouth is a weapon. It is a weapon, right? And it's one we can use for good. And God's word tells us, right, that we can speak life and truth and we can build people up. And it says the same thing, so we can destroy things with our words, with our mouths, right? And if you've been on the receiving end of that, you know how true that can be. And so tonight, we're going to find out whether it's fighting for your recovery, for your relationship with Jesus, right? The things of God, or if it's fighting against it. And so tonight's message is titled this, Watch Your Mouth. Watch your mouth. And so according to a study from the University of Arizona, the average person speaks over 16,000 words a day. Unless you're Bo, it's 32,000. But the rest of us speak about 16,000 words a day. That's 112,000. That's a 112,000 word novel every week. And so, if you're wondering whether your words matter, you're literally writing the story of your life with your mouth, right? Literally writing it. And get this: 75% of relationship breakdowns trace back to tone, not content. Right? The things that we say, the things that we imply, they impact the ones that we love, the ones that we care about. It's not what you said necessarily, it's just how you say it. And again, this is where I get into the most trouble, right? I'm a truth teller. And I feel like the best thing I can do for someone is be honest with them. And I do it from a place of love, and that's what I think. But oftentimes, just because my tone and my approach, people take offense and they're wounded by it. How many of you have been wounded by something I've said in personal conversation? There you go, one. Be honest. I feel like some of you are lying because you're like, that guy's kind of a jerk and I've been going to church with him for a long time. And but, you know, typically as you get to know him, you're like, he's just an idiot. But it's just one of these things that is so easy. It's so easy to be taken the wrong way, no matter what our intent is. We have to be so careful about what comes out of our mouth. And so in recovery, in relationship, in discipleship, what you say and how you say it can either breathe life into somebody or suffocate it, right? Remove it. And it can take away the progress that God is trying to make. And so James, in James 3, he doesn't hold back. I love the way he words this, but he gives it to us straight. And so we're going to jump in. James chapter 3. In James chapter 3, he speaks into a culture where words are often used for power, influence, self-promotion, right? This was the Greco-Roman type of culture in the day and age. Now, what's odd is it's not so different from today, right? When we look at words today and we look at this, right? It's power, influence, self-promotion. That's what they're used for today. What's changed is the media, right? The way that we experience these. Now it's all on a social media platform and we're less vocal, you know, this way, and we're more vocal with the keyboard, right? We got any keyboard ninjas, warriors in here, right? You hide behind that. But, you know, we do that, right? So we get online and we say these things, these hurtful things, put people on blast and things on blast, right? And so our platforms change. The problem is it's much broader, right? It's a lot wider. We impact a lot more people now than we used to. And so these things are used for power, influence, self-promotion. James reminds the church that godly speech flows from a surrendered heart. And true wisdom is proven by peace, humility, and good conduct, not persuasive talk. And so in both the ancient and modern worlds, our words reflect character, our character, and our alignment with God. And so in James 3, starting in verse 1, it says this, "Dear brothers and sisters, not many of you should become teachers in the church, for we who teach will be judged more strictly. Indeed, we all make many mistakes, for if we can control our tongues, we would be perfect." Say that, perfect. Perfect, and could also control ourselves in every other way. That's just an incredible insight, right? One, to how difficult it is to control our mouths, and the power and impact it would have on our lives if we could. And James is saying, you could do this. If you could master this, you would be perfect. You would be perfect and could also control yourselves in every way. There's so many things that I've been able to successfully surrender to God. So many places he's moved in my life. And my biggest struggle to date is my temper and my mouth. And those things go hand in hand, right? Because when I get a little ticked off, then this thing starts running and running and running and running, right? And James says, man, if you could get that. But the truth of the matter is I can't outside of God, right? That it's got to be submitted to him. And so this is always a window of a place in my life that I have not submitted and surrendered to him. And then he goes on, he says, "We can make a large horse go wherever we want by means of a small bit in its mouth. And a small rudder makes a huge ship turn wherever the pilot chooses to go, even though the winds are strong." And so Imagine that, right? I mean, when we look at the horse, it's a powerful animal, right? It's much stronger than us, but we can guide and direct it. And the same with these boats and ships, right? The rudder, in comparison to the rest of the size of the vessel, is insignificant. And that's the language that Paul uses. He says, man, look at these things with these small devices, right? Big things can move. And you know what it's all about? Direction. The direction that it's going. And he goes this, he says this, in the same way, the tongue is a small thing that makes grand speeches, but a tiny spark can set a great forest on fire. He says, in the same way, say that, the same way. In the same way that these things impact the direction of the animal and the vessel, in the same way, your mouth, your tongue impacts the direction of your life, right? If your marriage isn't like the way that you want it to be, I mean, I have to ask you, are you speaking life into your spouse, right? Are you loving your wife? Are you loving your husband? Or are you telling them where they miss it in those things all the time, right? That we've got to begin to speak life into that situation. Are your kids dirt bags? Maybe it's their fault. Maybe it's yours, right? Are you telling them, man, you're such a screw up, right? Or are you speaking love? Are you speaking life? And some of you are laughing, but that's truth, right? I mean, I'm a parent of teenagers. I know how easy it is. I ask them all the time, like, you know, are you an idiot? And they're like, Dad, you can't call this stupid. I said, I didn't. I asked a question. The answer to that question is up to you, right? And I'm just being inquisitive. But it's a joke, right? They can internalize those things and it can impact them, right? And it can set the course. It can set the direction of those situations. That's what James is saying. He said, Do not discount the power of your speech and how much it'll impact every facet of your life. When we're dealing with men in Live Free, that they're coming into recovery, you can always tell one that's gonna fail. Why? Because their words precede them, right? Precede them in death, ultimately. And they begin to speak this negativity and speak failure, speak relapse, right? It comes first. And you can always say, oh, they've got 3 more weeks. You could almost set your watch to it. It's amazing, right? We can see these things because, man, we're leading the way with our tongue. And so if there's an area of your life that's not where you want it to be, are you the problem? Right? If we begin to speak how awful our job is, it's going to be a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? And so we got to take these things, what James says, in the same way, the tongue is a small thing that makes grand speeches, but a tiny spark can set a great forest on fire. And he says, and among all the parts of the body, the tongue is a flame of fire. It's a whole world of wickedness, corrupting your entire body. It can set your whole life on fire, for it is set on fire by hell itself. What imagery that James uses, right? Because he doesn't want us to miss the significance, right, that our words have. And how much power and influence they have over our lives, right? That it's not something that we should misuse or mistreat. They're not empty. They're not void. They carry the power of life or death. And today we live in a digital world where words are cheap and constant, right? We're always grandstanding. We're always telling people our opinions. We want people to know and we get out there, we're so opinionated, right? And these things become white noise culturally, but they don't carry any less weight or significance, right? This is the culture we live in. Social media gives everyone a microphone, and many of us, and I've been guilty of this, will use it without restraint, right? We've all got our own town square. And we want to be the main character, and we want everyone to know how politically smart we are, you know, and what great parents we are, and we just want to give all this unwarranted advice and things that people didn't ask for, right? And we see this all the time without any regard for what it'll do. Sarcasm gets retweets. Cancel culture thrives on quick judgments. We've learned to clap back, talk over, and comment before we understand. Right, this is what we're teaching ourselves in this culture. Oftentimes we get in conversation and we're not listening to listen. You know what we're doing? We're listening to respond. Without, again, any idea of what our words, what kind of weight they carry. We post without praying, rant without repenting. In this environment, we've lost the sacred weight of our words. We've lost it. But James reminds us, just like a spark can torch a forest, a sentence can torch a relationship. Some of us are one statement away from divorce. One statement. One statement away from no longer having our children in our lives. One statement from losing your job. These things are not insignificant. And especially in today's culture, we've seen just the weight of this. And my first point is this. Our words, they may be small, but they're powerful. Your words are powerful. And God has entrusted you, right, with people. He's entrusted you with influence. That there's just people that you're supposed to steward, relationships that you should steward. And your words, they may be small, but they're not insignificant. And they carry a great power. And there's a great responsibility for you to use them in a way that encourages, that lifts people up, that speaks life, that speaks truth, that brings them to Jesus. And words may seem harmless in the moment, but they set the direction of the day. I can't tell you how many times I've probably ruined my kids' entire day by chewing them out right before they went to school. Or how many of us have had our days impacted because we've gotten this argument with a spouse, right? Right before we go off to do something. We've experienced this and we felt it. But how often do we take time to really reflect on how we are impacting those around us in the same way? They set the direction of your day and your relationships. And James wants us to grasp how powerful this small muscle really is. In a world that praises quick wit, sharp comebacks, we forget how easily sarcasm, slander can ruin reputations and relationships. We post without thinking, we vent instead of praying, we weaponize our tongues because it feels good in the moment. Because it feels good in the moment. My first point, our words are small, but powerful. In verse 7, he says, people can tame all kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, fish, but no one can tame the tongue. It is restless and evil and full of deadly poison. And you might be thinking, well, what hope is there? I guess I'm just going to fly off the handle whenever I feel, because what's the use? No, outside of Jesus, no one can do it, right? But we've got to just recognize that. And outside of Jesus, what hope do we have? Without allowing him to fill us. Because sometimes it praises our Lord and Father, and sometimes it curses those who have been made in the image of God. And so blessing and cursing come pouring out of the same mouth. Surely, my brothers and sisters, this is not right. Does a spring of water bubble out with both fresh water and bitter water? Does a fig tree produce olives or grapevines produce figs? No, and you can't draw fresh water from a salty spring. And you may be wondering, like, dude, that makes no sense. Don't even know what you're talking about. But James is trying to reveal to us that this, right, our mouths, they reveal what's in our heart, right? And that we can say things all we want on Sunday or Monday, but the truth will eventually come out of our mouths. Right, that you can't draw fresh water from that salty spring. And our culture encourages compartmentalized living. We curate a highlight reel online, right? We want everybody to see the best of the best. Well, we're trained for that, right? And again, I've been guilty of it. I mean, you know what? You're never going to see a picture of me and my wife fighting on Facebook. It's not going to do it, right? I only want you to see the best. You'll see the good picture of my kids, but not all the death threats that took to get that picture, right? And so, because of that, we do the same thing with our speech, right? The things that we say, quote a Bible verse here, man, share this really spiritual meme, right? And all of this stuff. And then, man, we go to dog cussing the people around us. And James is saying that right there should reveal a problem in your life. So we curate the highlight reels while chaos brews underneath. We sing on Sunday, but we slander on Mondays. Gossip, curse. We use spiritual language in public, but justify profanity and rage in private. Don't we? Surely I'm not the only one that's been guilty of this. And James is saying that's an issue. Do not convince yourself that you can draw fresh water out of that salty mouth. He goes on. This idea that society celebrates speaking your truth, even if that truth crushes somebody else. And there's balance here. You know, again, I'm a truth teller. I think it's important. It's one of the ways that I love people. And you may be like, that's a really crappy way to love people. Can't you just like buy a gift? No. But truth without love is meaningless. Now, love without truth is just mean, right? And so we have to have this balance here that we have both. And so we have to take into account how those words impact people. And so we'll speak truth, even if that truth crushes somebody else. But James confronts that duplicity head on. He says, your mouth is a mirror. It doesn't hide what's in your heart. It exposes it. It exposes it. In a world obsessed with image management, this passage calls us back to integrity, where what comes out of us actually matches what we claim to believe. So my second point is this: what flows from your mouth reveals what's ruling your heart. And so when we go back to the 16,000 words a day, what are the majority of those words saying? Are they spoken out of frustration, anger, bitterness? Is that what takes up the majority of them? Because if so, that's flowing from an unhealthy heart, right? It's revealing something that our tongues, you know what they are? They're great thermometers for where we're at spiritually. And if the majority of what we're saying is idle, useless, hateful, frustrated, bitter, or angry, it's a thermometer to reveal that we're not as spiritually healthy as we might think. And so we've got to begin to realize, again, what flows from our mouth reveals what's ruling our heart. And James doesn't just talk about the danger of words. He exposes the root, right? That the words are kind of the consequence of something else being unhealthy. It's not the problem. It's evidence of something else. And he says the real issue isn't the tongue, it's the heart. The mouth is just a microphone. It amplifies what's been growing inside you. Amplifies what's been growing inside you. Whether it's bitterness, pride, peace, or surrender, it will show up in your speech. It'll show up. It'll show up. So it's up to you, it's up to me, it's up to us to begin to examine our words. Because again, it reveals what's underneath. And we live in a world that encourages duality, this duplicity. Put on your Sunday mask, man, and live the rest of your life however you want to live it. And James is just reminding us, man, you can't live that way. You spend most of your time out in the world, surrounded, enveloped in culture. It's going to come out. We post scriptures, verses, gossip in the same breath. Our culture praises the unfiltered voice. We call it authenticity, right? And again, this is probably the area I struggle the most. I really, really want to tell you where you messed up. Like, it bugs me not to do that. And you may be laughing, but I'm just telling you, like, it's just a part of me that's broken. And I have to remind myself, God's called me to love people too. And in this culture that's celebrated, to be unfiltered and real, I have to bring about balance. So we live in this culture of duplicity, celebrates this unfiltered voice, but James calls it deception. The problem isn't our vocabulary, it's the source. We don't have a word problem, we have a heart problem. And the truth is, the tongue doesn't malfunction randomly. It doesn't malfunction randomly, it reveals what's been stored up inside. So my second point again, what flows from your mouth reveals what's been ruling your heart. If your mouth keeps getting you into trouble, it's not a speech problem, it's a surrender problem. You can't fix your words until you let God change your heart. And so in verse 13, he says, if you are wise and understand God's ways, prove it by living an honorable life, doing good works with humility that comes from wisdom. But if you're bitterly jealous and there's selfish ambition in your heart, don't cover up the truth with boasting and lying. I want to repeat that. But if you're bitterly jealous and there's selfish ambition in your heart, don't cover up the truth but boasting and lying. How many of us cover up our motives, right? We know. Hey, I just want to let you know who to pray for, you know? And so we're telling somebody's dirty laundry. Why? Because we want to make them look bad. And it just feels better if we convince you that we're trying to pray for them. Yeah, that's real quiet on that one. You're like, I never do that. James is saying, don't cover up your motives with boasting and lying. Don't use the wicked tongue. For jealousy and selfishness are not God's kind of wisdom. Such things are earthly and spiritual and demonic. For wherever there is jealousy and selfish ambition, there you'll find disorder and evil of every kind. But the wisdom from above is first of all pure. It is also peace-loving, gentle at all times, and willing to yield to others. It's full of mercy and the fruit of good deeds. It shows no favoritism and is always sincere. And those who are peacemakers will plant seeds of peace and reap a harvest of righteousness. In today's world, being wise often means being loud and opinionated, right? And that, you know, we're persuasive. And I fit into that. Like, I like that because I can be loud. I can be aggressive. It's not healthy. And James is saying, don't cover your motives. We equate intelligence with dominance. Everyone wants to be right. Few want to be righteous. Right? We can justify anything. And James is saying, don't use your words to cover up what's in your heart. Don't use your words to cover up what's in your heart. Podcasts, YouTube debates, TikTok preachers teach us to build platforms, not character, but James draws a clear line. God's wisdom doesn't boast, bully, or compete. It humbly serves. It seeks peace, not praise. It builds people, not platforms. In a culture where knowledge is weaponized and wisdom is twisted ego, James calls us to live the kind of truth that doesn't sound right. It acts right. It acts right. Again, he was coming from this culture where people would try to say all the right things. Why? For power and for influence. We live in a culture today where people want to say the right things. Why? For power and influence. And James is reminding us that it's not what we say, it's what we do, right? And that your wicked tongue, our mouths, our words will seek to cover up this root of brokenness. But the thing that speaks louder than that is what we do. My last point is this: real wisdom doesn't speak truth, it lives it. It lives it. You don't have to scroll long, man, to find opinions. So-called wisdom, but James, he reminds us that true wisdom is humble, it's peace-loving, it's full of mercy. It doesn't just talk, it lives. Real wisdom isn't proved in your arguments, but in your actions. I can say all sorts of things, but what really matters is how I show up for you. I can see you out in the lobby and tell you I love you, but if my actions show that I'm going to go behind you and be backstabbing, then it doesn't really mean anything, does it? And so, one, we have to begin to submit our lives, including our tongue, to God. Our words matter. They're powerful. They're powerful. Submit them to him. If our speech doesn't line up, if we say we love people on Sunday and Monday, but we're trash-talking Tuesday through Saturday, that's a thermometer, and it's revealing that there's something unhealthy growing inside of you. And that the most important thing is not to just show up with more words, but to show up in a way that you're living out what you would claim, or what you would speak with your words, right? That it's showing up in the way that we live. James reminds us true wisdom is humble, it's peace-loving, and full of mercy. It doesn't just talk, it lives. Real wisdom isn't proved in your arguments. It's seen in our actions. Seen in our actions. If your words are wise, but your life is chaotic, you might be using the wrong kind of wisdom. So don't just ask, am I saying the right thing? ask, am I living the right way? Because the wisest people in the room usually aren't the loudest, they're the most surrendered. I want us to do this. I want you to bow your heads and close your eyes. I want us to spend a moment with God. And I mean, this is a thing quite often, but to be introspective, right? To look in. I know this. I see most of you here at church. I get a polished version of people, right? You get a polished version of me in a lot of ways. But there's ways that we talk outside of these four walls that reveal something deeper and more genuine. And so I want to ask you to spend a moment with God and reflect on those words, those things that you say to your husband, those things that you say to your wife, that you say to your children, that you say to your coworkers. And as you're spending that moment, I want you to be reminded that your words may be small, but they're powerful. That your words reveal what's in your heart. That you've got to give an account for them. And right now, just to begin doing that. And then remember that in all of this, that as you're repenting, and I hope that you are, right, that you've identified a place that your speech isn't the way that it should be, don't correct it with more talk. Commit to live differently. Don't just say you'll change. Change. Live differently. So I want you to just spend a moment with God and just begin to think on those things.